If asked what the four major food groups are, I'd probably get a variety of answers in here. I did ask a few people, and one person listed fast food, fried food, sugar, and chocolate. In seminary, we used to joke that the four major food groups were salt, fat, caffeine, and alcohol. So we fit right in there. When people are hungry, boy, there's nothing more satisfying than food. Food is right up there on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You ever have a growling stomach? Boy, ever been to the grocery store when you're hungry? Oh, and you buy everything, even stuff you don't need or want or can afford, and sometimes you open the package before you get to the cashier, or maybe that's just me. Jesus knew the importance of food. When Jesus was speaking, people gladly listened. A great storyteller he was. People listened until they got hungry. Did you notice that in this story? He may be a great speaker, but even the Christ can't hold your attention if you're not given a food and bathroom break. Well, in this case, we're not talking about people who had choices of food that we have today. A quick survey of the situation revealed all they had that day, bread and fish. And not much of that. 5 loaves, 2 fish, that's it. No Pepsi, no Diet Coke, no fries and a burger, no salad and chocolate, and you wonder why they were cranky. And this has to be no picnic for Jesus. Jesus was on a retreat to grieve the death of his cousin, John the Baptist. He's grieving, and the crowds press in on him. And so he sets aside his own issues and goes out to the people and has compassion on them, and he heals the sick. And when the day is finished, when he's hit that wall of exhaustion along with everyone else, it's at such times that when human limits have been met, that God introduces the miraculous in human affairs. See, now the story's going to get interesting. Now, it would be much, much easier at the end of the day for Jesus to have, well, followed the reasonable advice of his reasonable disciples, who are hungry themselves. The disciples are only trying to be helpful and doing the most reasonable thing possible given the circumstance. Send the crowds away, they advise, before it gets too late. They can find shelter and food in a nearby village. There's nothing wrong with such advice. There's nothing wrong with that. After all, the disciples have, well, counted up the loaves and the fish and took a rough guess at the number of people. With 5 loaves and 2 fish, you're not going to feed a crowd that may have numbered 13,000 people or more. Now, remember that 5,000 figure? It only includes the men who were present. That figure didn't include wives, moms, single women, young women, young children who were boys, girls of any age. They didn't count women and children back then. And in so many ways, our society still doesn't. So you know, it certainly exceeded 5,000. And some scholars say 11, 12, maybe even 13,000 hungry folks. So it makes sense. It makes sense for the disciples to say, send the crowd away before it's too late. They can find shelter and food in a nearby village. But instead, Jesus utters what I think is the take-home message from this text. They need not go away. You give them something to eat. They need not go away. You give them something to eat. 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 No matter how you say it, they need not go away. I think it's hard for us to relate to that kind of hunger. When I was on sabbatical a few years ago, I went to a rural part of Ghana and stayed at a home that was, well, upper middle class. The poor neighborhood kids in that area would gladly fetch water for us. There was no running water where we were. They would fetch water for us in return for a meal. It was the only meal they were going to get that day. It's hard for us to relate to that kind of hunger. Most of us, quite frankly, eat too much. It's not an issue of whether we're going to eat, but what we'll eat and how much we'll eat and how healthy it'll be. The odd thing about being in the remote area of Ghana to me was that some of the same issues about food they had that we have. It was difficult to try to get them to eat healthy. Being so close to the equator, they could grow almost anything. It was wonderful. My son Michael and I would go to schools with a translator, and we would try to teach them about healthy fruits and vegetables to eat. But the kids wanted to be like Westerners, eat junk food. Well, here in our text, the disciples react to the problem of wanting to send the seekers, the hungry, the needy away to fend for themselves. And that's bootstrap religion at its worst. It makes victims of hunger and poverty, oppression, victims all over again. The disciples are not evil. They're not hard-hearted. They sincerely believe that they're out of resources and that the only solution for the hungry is to own their own hunger and do something about it. In short, the disciples, and perhaps some of us today, don't believe we have anything to offer. We'd be more than happy to help the truly needy if we had the means. But generally, our response is, well, send them away. We don't have anything. This is a response that creates emotional distance. What we can't see can't affect us or impact us. I think we walk around covering our eyes a lot. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see them. Sometimes it's covering our ears. Oh, I didn't hear that. Jesus, however, never kept his distance from the poor, the hungry, or the diseased. And now, having healed the sick, he wasn't about to send them away hungry. They need not go away. What to do? The disciples don't have a clue until Jesus says, "You give them something to eat." This is our calling as well, yours and mine, to give the hungry something to eat. And on the authority of Jesus, we can say with all confidence that we do, in fact, have something to give. All Jesus asked of them was to take what was at hand and use it. God would take care of the rest. 5 loaves, 2 fish, give it to God. God will give it to the people. 5 loaves, 2 fish, those were the assets. So what do we have as assets? Well, many years ago on the television series MacGyver, the hero was always getting out of a scrape at the last minute using the materials at hand. With duct tape and chewing gum and fertilizer, he would manage to build a sailplane and get off the island before it blew up, or some kind of fantastic thing in that make-believe world, right? Well, in this very real world, what do we have? Jesus says, they need not go away. Okay, so what are our assets? We need to do an inventory. What do we have to give? What are our version of duct tape and chewing gum and fertilizer? What haven't we thought about? Take what is at hand, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and give it away to God's hungry people, believing that God will do wonders with our offerings. Jesus takes small things at hand, a cup of water, and does more than just wash feet. Souls are cleansed. Jesus takes a loaf of bread and breaks it, and it becomes a symbol for a meal that will feed the soul. Here Jesus takes 5 loaves and 2 fish and does what compassion calls for at the moment. He refuses to be overwhelmed by either his own need for comfort or the urgent needs of people. Instead of anxiety of not having enough, he looks on the face of hunger and does the right thing. Jesus took what was given and he blessed it and he offered it to God in gratitude. Boy, if we could have that attitude instead of, well, we only have. Then he proceeded to break what was given so that it could be multiplied. The first action is the taking what is given, asking God to bless it, breaking it, and finally giving what is broken so that all may have something. Nothing's left behind. No one is left out. In the end, all are satisfied. So, how did it happen? I mean, really, how did it happen? Did the miracle occur when a meager basket of bread and fish was passed among the people? And they dug into their own baskets, added a little bit of bread and fish that they had brought along for the journey. It was common practice for Jews to carry a basket of food in that day, sort of like we carry backpacks and purses and such. So in case they encountered a situation because of their food restrictions where, well, they couldn't eat what was present, they did have something to eat in their baskets. When Wendy and my kids were little, we always had snacks in backpacks and in her purse. In Mark's gospel, it mentions that the disciples carried baskets with them. Maybe the people realized, well, they didn't have enough for all 13,000. They had enough for their family and maybe a few others around them. There's always leftovers at a church picnic and potluck. I wonder if, as the baskets were passed around, if people took enough to eat, but also put some back in to share with others, if they had anything to share, because, well, it seemed like only the right thing to do, sort of like potlucks at church. A few weeks ago, we had a salad spectacular, and lots of people shared, and if people needed stuff, they took it, and you know what? We had baskets of food left over. We had over 12 baskets of food left over. We don't know exactly how miracles occur, but I have to say that when we start sharing our resources with others, miraculous things start to happen. Trusting in God, acting with compassion, scarcity is transformed into abundance. Therefore, when the hungry come looking for food, when those who are in deep sorrow come looking for comfort, when the confused come looking for direction, when the bitter come looking for reconciliation, when the powerless come looking for strength, when the addicted come looking for deliverance, when the fearful come looking for courage, when the hopeless come looking for hope, when the wounded come looking for healing, when the discriminated upon come looking for acceptance and welcome, let us be bold and remember the words of Jesus, "They need not go." And let us remember we have assets. With palms reaching out, we're the voices providing welcome. We're the hearts giving compassion. We're the ones casting votes for people who set policies. You and I are the ones called by God to be grace-giving, hope-giving to a world that is truly broken. That's right. This group, in this very room, we have assets. My prayer this day is very simple. I pray that we all have courage to let go and to share our blessings. Maybe the miracle, letting go of what we previously had held tight, maybe letting go is the biggest miracle of all. It's miraculous what God can do with us when we share. Thank you. Amen. I have one thing. Go ahead and have a seat. I forgot one announcement. Please forgive me for this, but we had a big thing happen this morning. The social justice team raised a rainbow flag this morning. And while some rejoiced in raising the flag, others voiced a concern and worry. And I want you to know that I've heard both voices. A rainbow is a symbol that makes a powerful statement about who we are. Some in society, I am sure, will reject openness and affirming approach. Please know that our social justice team and I and the clergy on staff are not naive. Our own experience in hanging a rainbow banner last summer has been extremely well received. Our rainbow flowers around the fountain, well, they're battered by the monsoon, but they're still spinning. Rainbows aren't just to welcome the LGBTQ community. It's a welcome for one and all. When we considered this step in faith, we contacted other congregations to get real-life experiences. I contacted several clergy friends in the UCC and the Disciples. I wanted the real scoop. Most said they had received good comments. The worst was reported from our friend and former interim pastor, Jim Meadows. I had lunch with Jim this very week, and the raising of the flag was mentioned, and he applauded us for that. While supporting our move, he reminded me of his experience. In 15 months at the Shepherd of the Hills UCC, it's had 3 flags stolen. Each time, Jim just puts up a new one. You know, I'm not naive, and I expect ours one day to be stolen. And if that happens, we're going to follow Jim's lead and put up a new one, and a new one, and a new one. For those who are afraid, I too see that fear. And that fear is a glimpse. It is a sliver of what some folks feel 24/7, 365 days a year. I also know that God is calling us to be faithful. We must use our heart, we must use our brains, and we must muster up some courage. So rather than living as though we are untouched by faith, let us be a citadel against bigotry. Let us be bold examples for our neighbors of what faithful living looks like, and let us not shrink and hide from our responsibilities to be God's palms, reaching out with love and acceptance. Let us not have the fear-mongers frame the moment, but rather let us live these days, and let us define the moment in God's terms, expressing love, grace, and acceptance for all of God's children. Thanks. Now back to your